From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of October, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast to that with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics in Chicago. Along the way, we'll hear from agricultural economist from Iowa State University Extension, Chad Hart. He has some thoughts about what producers can and maybe should do as it's related to selling grain across the scale and buying it back for any future price hikes in Chicago. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, a couple things as we get started for the afternoon. First, do visit willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. Either place, you'll be able to buy tickets, register for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up on the Monday prior to Thanksgiving, the same week as Thanksgiving, the 21st day of November at the I Hotel right here in Champaign. That's just to the south of the State Farm Center, the Assembly Hall in Urbana-Champaign, where the Illini basketball team plays. You'll want to visit with us on that day to be on hand as the Farm Doc team takes the stage, along with the crop scientist from the U of I and some industry specialists. You can see all the details at farmassetsconference.com or at willag.org or at the Farm Doc Daily website. Look under Webinars and IPAS. You'll find all kinds of things related to the Farm Assets Conference, and you could register to join us on that day, the 21st day of November. Again, the address, farmassetsconference.com, or go to willag.org and look for the link. The second thing, if you were listening closely on Friday, you know that I have contracted COVID, or at least I tested positive. And last week, I was a little tired during the week, and frankly, I probably would not have tested on Friday other than I was supposed to MC an event for those who had been to the Elkhart High School, which consolidated in 1976 and has not been functioning since then. It went to Mount Pulaski at that point. So anybody who had graduated or would have graduated would have been at that event. That meant the oldest group was, I believe, 1956, so 56 to 76 or thereabouts. I thought it best to make sure that I was not COVID positive, and the only reason I tested because I had happened to have a sore throat on Friday. I came up positive Friday and positive again today, but I'm perfectly fine and working okay. So I wanted to give you an update on myself. I did mention that I have had five. That's right. I've had all of the shots and the boosters. I had no intention or no expectation, I should say, that I'd be able to avoid COVID all the time, but this is the first time I've managed to pick up COVID. But I've been working and been just perfectly fine. Now, let's turn our attention to what happened in the marketplace. December corn today at $6.81.5, down 2 3/4. The March at $6.87 3/4, 2 3/4 lower. And the May contract, $6.87 1/4, down 2.5 cents. November beans, $13.72, 23.5 lower. January at $13.81 1/4, down 23 1/4. The March soybeans at $13.89 1/4, down 22.5 cents. Bean meal futures down 9.20 at $4.08.70. And the bean oil for the day at $71.87, up 37 cents. Soft red winter wheat at $8.38 3/4, down 12, and the hard red at $9.38, down 10 1/4. Live cattle futures finished the day at $154.12, up $1.70 per 100 pounds. Feeders at $181.95, $1.57.5 higher, and lean hogs were down $1.20 at $87.92 1/2. Crude oil for the day at $84.48, down 57 cents. The diesel fuel at $3.56 1/2. That's heating oil, 1 2/10 cents higher, and gasoline at $2.50 even, up about 2.5 cents. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net to discuss what happened in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us. What happened with soybeans and wheat today?
Well, good afternoon, Ty. Glad to be here. Well, we started the evening all fair. Then we kind of slipped a little lower on just a lot of odds and ends. One, we had an active harvest weekend. In fact, some of these grain facilities are getting a little plugged up, slowing down a little bit, and needing to move some grain around. Even though some of the grain's relatively dry for the most part, there's a few spots still a little wet and having to run through some dryers. I think that kind of limited the enthusiasm. But two, the Chinese elections and the new, not new, but the old administration taking over, gives some new appointments, and their stock market down overnight kind of limited the buying interest, along with that world fear, the recessionary, inflationary concerns and overall consumption. Then also, there's a little better forecast for portions of Brazil on receiving some moisture. There's all kinds of estimates on how far along they are, but we kind of looked at the numbers, Brazil being about 34% complete on plantings versus 24% last week and 37.9% a year ago. And I believe about 27% is average for this time of year. They still have some time to go. Of course, Argentina, it'll be a little while for them, and they still remain relatively dry for the most part. Got into the export inspections report, and wheat inspections was 121,000 tons. They're looking for 200 to 500. Corn inspections showing the shipments was 470,000 tons. They were looking for 300 to 650, that in the middle of the range. But the beans were a little bit more aggressive than what they thought. The traders looked for 1 to 2 million metric tons. It came in 2.8. And so that's what gave the market support there after 10 o'clock, and we're able to bounce. But it was awful hard to maintain those bounces as we moved through the last part of the session there, Todd.
What are your expectations for the rest of the week? We're still under a lot of harvest pressure, and we'll know how much, I suppose, when USDA releases its set of numbers tomorrow afternoon with the updates.
Yeah, we'll see how the week goes here, but I think we'll continue to be in a sideways trading range. And I was kind of surprised myself this morning here. You know, I kind of looked at the range for October, November beans. They've only got a 64-cent trading range from high to low, and that's kind of boring type of range. We're used to $1.50 up, $1.50 down, so we're actually kind of coiling, consolidating sideways. December corn had 35-cent trading range so far for the month, and so I think we'll continue this trend here for a while. We do have end of the month coming up here next week from today's 31st. We'll have some bean deliveries, see how that goes. But I think the computers are wanting to pump in some bullish news for a few days and turn around and pump in some bearish news for a few days, and we'll continue to grind sideways. Probably the biggest thing is, as we move forward in through here, you know, guys are wrapping up. We're getting fairly well complete here locally on beans, still have a little bit more corn to go, and some of these guys are starting to have to make the decision whether to store or sell.
You mentioned that we were coiling. Are we coiling up or coiling down, and what do each of those mean?
Well, actually, we're consolidating sideways. We're making, you know, a sideways little pennant formation here. If you connect the highs and the lows, we can come to a point in the soybean complex here by end of this week, first part of next week. On the corn side of the equation, you might want to call it more of a broad-based type. Some can try to call it a sloppy head and shoulders top if it kind of catches in through here. But it seems like the corn inches above $7, we find selling resistance. They break towards that 660 area, we're finding buyers in there. On the feed grain side on this corn, continue to watch the commercial side here, and there's still some coverage needed to take place. They have some short-term coverage in through here, but it kind of feels like the overall basis levels would stay firm as we go into year end. If there's a negative basis level in your area, I think it'll turn positive as we head into year end. But after that, it's going to depend on that South American forecast. A lot of trade continues to pencil in some bigger production numbers out of the southern hemisphere, but they don't have the ground yet.
Are there any changes in the Black Sea region, the Ukraine-Russia war, and what impact it has on the marketplace?
That continues to be a news item, the Black Sea region, what's going to happen with Putin's aggressive stance there. Then plus two, China. They've got a lot of beans on the books. So far, we're fortunate to see those sales be shipped out here on today's report. We just need to make sure we stay in good grace with them and make sure they continue to take these beans. And they need grain. The Chinese corn price moved to new highs. Their crushing margins are extremely high. And so there's profitability of crushing beans.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net in Normal, Illinois, and joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can find it and listen to it again anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Have you registered yet for the Farm Assets Conference at the iHotel on the 21st day of November? That's the Monday prior to Thanksgiving. If not, I hope you will do so very soon. We'll open our doors at 8:30 a.m., kick off at 9 o'clock by updating the carbon markets with Sarah Sellers. She's from the University of Illinois College of ACES. Joanna Colucci will be there to update us about crop prospects in Argentina and Brazil. And then we'll take up the Farm Bill for 2023 with Jonathan Kappas and Nick Paulson, both U of I agricultural policy specialist and ag economist. Mary Kay Thatcher from Syngenta Governmental and Industry Relations will join us as well. You might recognize her name from the American Farm Bureau Federation. In the rest of the morning, we'll talk with Josh Linville of StoneX. He's a fertilizer analyst, along with Gary Schnitke, to take up crop budgets, Ukraine, Russia, and spring fertilizer prices. We'll take all the time for some lunch. And then come back, we'll talk about the supply and demand tables with Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen, and bring on the agricultural brokers from WILL, including Matt Bennett, Ben Coons, Wayne Nelson, and Brian Stark, all College of ACES grads, to talk about the marketplace. We'll close things out in the afternoon by talking about field crops with Aaron Hager, weed scientist, Emily Heaton, agronomist, Giovanni Perez Pontes, the new University of Illinois Extension agronomist, Nick Sider, the Extension entomologist, and the value of farmland with Bruce Sherrick from the U of I and Luke Worrell of Worrell Land Services. It should be a great day at the Farm Assets Conference. If you've not registered yet, you can do that right now online at farmassetsconference.com. On this Monday, let's check with Chad Hart. He's at Iowa State University, an agricultural economist with Extension there in Ames. Good day to you, Chad. Thank you for being with us. First, kind of give me conditions in Iowa. What have farmers found as they opened up their fields and have gotten into harvest?
Well, that's the deal. We've made a lot of progress on harvest, especially over the past week and a half. And I would say the general storyline is, a little better than they expected, but it's still highly variable out there with really good to near record crops as we look out east with some producers. But if you look towards the western side of the state, yeah, those drought issues are definitely cropping up. But I would say the farmers that were out there, they expected worse than they saw when they got out in the field.
What are your concerns with the market, if any? And if not, what are the things you really like about it, or possibly both?
Say a little bit here. I think when we're looking at our cash prices right now, but despite being in the middle of harvest, we are still seeing some very strong cash prices as we're looking at the market. In fact, I was staring at the Interior Iowa Grain Report here this morning for last Friday, and you're sitting there with a average cash price across the state, corn of $6.70 a bushel. Beans was well over $13. So those are very strong harvest prices for what we've got right now. But I would say the concerns looking forward here are that we know we're going to have some problems, if you will, moving this crop along. Definitely the problems in the river system do concern me as I'm looking forward, because if we can't move the crop on the river, that means more of it backs up here, and that will put some downward pressure on those prices, at least here in the short term.
What should producers do, if anything, about it?
It depends on what sort of position they're in here. I mean, I know A lot of producers are going to utilize their storage to try to hold on to crops into the springtime and look for that seasonal price bounce. But I think for those that do have to move the crop now, don't have the storage capacity here, like I say, the cash price are good and leave yourself open to upside potential deeper into the year. Now's a good time to be looking at call options out there to sort of give you that upward price mobility, even though you've had to sell the crop because of the lack of storage.
How much time should they give themselves in those options? For what much do you think they should potentially purchase them?
Typically, I like to look out there towards that July time frame, with the thought process being, seasonal pricing trends tell us between basically Mother's Day and Father's Day is when we tend to see the seasonal high there. So I want to give myself the opportunity to look at pricing within that time frame.
Anything for soybean?
For soybean, we're seeing, like I say, something very similar as we look out there. Prices are really strong right now as I'm looking at the cash bids. I do have concerns, again, about moving that crop down the river. Luckily, we have seen where corn export sales have been lackluster here over the past couple of weeks. Soybeans, we saw a little bit more movement here over the past week or so. So that's a hopeful sign. But, yeah, again, if we can't get the beans to those export markets, even if they are active, that's going to be a limiting factor as we look here.
Anything else we should discuss?
I think the other big thing that I'm looking at right now would be, not only can we move that crop down the river, but I'm starting to look at, what our input costs are looking for as we're looking towards next spring. And I think, again, the river represents a major challenge here. Given the way harvest is moving, I know a lot of producers are looking to do fall field work as quickly as possible as well. And let's face it, river slowdowns mean higher input cost as we look out towards 2023.
Does that mean that producers might want to plan on some of those inputs for next spring? Usually it's the dry fertilizer that would be coming up the Mississippi River.
It usually is. And so that's one of the things I'm sort of watching to see how farmers will react. Again, I've been sort of looking at, okay, where were we at last year at this time versus where were we at last spring? And when I'm looking at, our fertilizer prices, we are, much higher than we were this time last year, but we're still significantly lower than what we were at this past spring. And so if the river system is going to have problems, like it looks like it's going to here, I think we could see those prices rise again moving into the springtime here. So basically, the more I can do now, the better off I might be. And so I think when we're looking here, yes, I now recognize that input costs are high, but I'm also looking at the possibility, like we saw last year, that they can go even higher. So what prep work I can do today may be time and money well spent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That's Chad Hart. He is an agricultural economist with Iowa State University Extension. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, we've been talking an awful lot about the Mississippi River, and when I glanced today at the radar, there was a great big storm front out there. I don't know whether one storm can do much to help a lot, but something's falling, and we haven't had really rainfall across the Corn Belt for a while. Can you tell me about it and any changes that might be coming?
Sure, Todd. Well, the forecast is certainly not as dry as it has been during the past really few months here, and there will be numerous frontal systems tracking across the central U.S. over the next week to 10 days, taking us into the early portion of November, and each one of those systems look to produce light to moderate rains. Now, one single event is not going to have any kind of impact on the extremely low water levels here within the Mississippi Basin. However, the fact that there will be, numerous events and even possibly more beyond the next 10 days will at least provide some opportunity for stabilization of the river level. So there may even be a few areas, such as like the middle portion of the Mississippi region, that could see an improvement in river levels. But all in all, the upcoming outlook here, it doesn't fully solve the problems, but at least the situation is not getting worse going into November.
How much rain do you expect that my part of the world might get tomorrow and Wednesday?
Yeah. From a total standpoint, we are forecasting around 3/4 to 1 inch. Could even be a few localized areas of those areas that see some of the stronger storms that pick up a little more than that. But in general, about 1/4 to 1/2 inch across actually much of the eastern half or so of Illinois and into western Indiana.
And who misses it that would really like to have it?
Well, up north into areas of far north and far south. So areas in around the Minnesota, northwest Iowa region, kind of the, you know, getting towards like the source of the Mississippi, like to see a lot more rain there to at least really begin to increase river levels. And then the far eastern Midwest and areas of like Ohio, for some of the soft red winter wheat there, they could use some more rain, as well as that would help improve the Ohio river levels as well. And that's one area that looks to, you know, kind of miss out with the more substantial rainfall coming up.
Turn your attention to South America. What are conditions like in Argentina and then Brazil?
Yeah, Argentina continues to be dry, and that's the main area to watch going forward due to, you know, the typical La Nina, you know, dryness conditions, which we've seen in recent years, and at least that is how things are beginning to play out at this early stage of the growing season there. There will be a little bit of rainfall here in the short term over the next couple of days, but not enough to significantly improve soil moisture. And so Argentina remains an area to continue monitoring. Now, some of that dryness does extend into far southern Brazil in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. So that's an area that we're adding to our watch list, as that area has been drier than normal and looks to stay that way here going forward. The rest of Brazil shapes. A very situation overall good across much of Brazil except far southern Brazil. Argentina is the highest and at least is the most concerning here going into November.
Just to reiterate, the parts of Brazil and Argentina that we're talking about that are driest, at least certainly the part of Brazil and the southern part of that nation, it's the same place that last year suffered a severe drought.
That is correct here, Todd. Yeah, far southern Brazil in the state of Rio Grande do Sul and then into Argentina. Now, last year, moving into like December, that dryness into like Uruguay and into Santa Catarina, Brazil, and Uruguay, and a little bit of southern Paraná. Now that dryness is basically staying in Rio Grande do Sul and not shifting northward, but that is something to watch, especially late this month and on into December. And, you know, how does that mimic last year?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics, joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online and buy your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference at willag.org, or you can visit farmassetsconference.com for those tickets. Thank you much for being with us here at Illinois Public Media.